Chapter 23. Writhing Riddles. Down through the near darkness, Guinevere ran, speeding along the corridors, quick-stepping down a long, enclosed, rough-hewn circular stair of huge proportions, coming out on a ledge overlooking a natural chamber where a battle was well underway. To the side she saw Zacnaphane and Entreri, rolling and running circles about a giant, stabbing where they could find an opening, diving and dodging swings from a heavy club. A second giant was on the floor, crawling, pulling itself along, destroyed legs behind it, leaving a trail of blood on the uneven stone, its very life pouring out with each labored movement. Not far away, a green monster hurled flame at Jarl Axel, who responded with a lightning bolt, a duel of magic back and forth. Guinevere leaped high and far, silently flying across the room. She felt the impact as she crashed down on the green slot. She felt it folding up beneath her, dug in her claws so that as it crumpled and tumbled, she would not let it go. She bit deep and hard into the side of the monster's head, back claws raking fiercely, front claws and teeth digging deeper, holding fast as the beast thrashed. Raking, digging, long after the beast lay still. Freed from his magical duel, one that had stung him painfully in many places, including his forearm, where the skin was licked and shriveled by a fireball, Jarl Axel gave a yelp of surprise, then a great deal of thanks for Gwen's unexpected intervention. He turned his attention to the remaining enemy, to his friends staying one step ahead of disaster and slowly, painfully, wearing the giant down. Jarl Axel lifted his uninjured arm, waiting for the giant to come around, then shot a bolt of lightning into its ugly face. The brute howled and dropped its club, its hands going up to slap against its destroyed eyes. Entreri and Zack went for the kill, leaping up and stabbing, leaping and stabbing, Karen's claw on its belly, Zack working cutter against a tree-like leg while repeatedly snapping his powerful bullwhip up across the giant's hands and face. They had it disoriented and off balance. They weren't about to let it ever find its balance again. The behemoth came down hard to one knee, its left leg torn apart by the fine edge of Cassidea, and Treri went to work methodically, his razor-like red blade sliding up to the hilt with every thrust. The giant crumpled and expired, not far from where the other one now lay still. The area fell quiet. Looking about, Jarl Axel said, "What is this place?" It was a large chamber, mostly natural but with shaped sections like the ledge and the stairs. Several tunnels ran off it, most of them worked stone, hinting at a much larger complex. "The green frog is dead," Zack replied. "We should get back with the others. There's too much here for us to risk getting separated." "Agreed," said Jarl Axel. "But I'm still curious. What is this place?" "A nursery," Entreri answered from a large door he had just opened, near to the last kill, one that led into a chamber that opened back under the tunnel that had brought them here. Jarl Axel and Zack hustled to join him. "Amazing," Jarl Axel murmured when he got there and peered in. The room before them was brighter than this one, with the same glowing globes as the room above, except this glow was purple instead of red, with one enormous light globe hanging over an open stone pit with angled walls so that the bottom was wider than the top, so that the polar worms could not crawl out. The three companions moved to the edge of the hole. Below them, scores and scores of young remorhazes squirmed and tangled. Some flapped tiny wings set just behind their heads to lift up toward the newcomers, toothy jaws opening to reveal their gullets, like baby birds when the mother returns to the nest. These were larger than the hatchling in the other room, some twice, some thrice, some four times that length. Several of the larger ones showed a heated glow along their spines, and the friends could feel the warmth from 20 feet above them. "Why would—" Entreri started to ask, but the question trailed off, and he just shook his head. "Building an army, perhaps," Jarl Axel answered, "to send them all crawling for Caladay." "How could they even control them?" Entreri replied. "And how big do these ugly things get?" "Look at this," Zack said, walking over to them and holding out his hands, showing them several crystals. He motioned behind him, and the other two followed his gaze to the corner, to a pile of crystals. Down in the pit, the worms began to click their mandibles frantically, and soon almost all of them had the front parts of their centipede-like bodies upright, small wings filling this room with a furious, fluttering sound. Jarlaxle motioned to Zack, who tossed one of the crystals down. The worm nearest its descent snapped at it, but missed, sending it clattering to the floor, where a cluster of polar worms attacked it, cracking it, powdering it with those powerful jaws.
"They eat crystals?" Entreri said skeptically.
"Look at the floor," Zack said, for indeed, now that they knew what they were looking for, the friends noted bits of crystal all about. A low growl from Guinevere and movement in the other room reminded them that this place wasn't secured, but they were relieved indeed when they turned about to find a sizable contingent of Caladaeans moving into the larger chamber. Azudana and Emelian joined the companions at the edge of the pit. "These beasts are among the most feared monsters to us in Caladae," Azudana explained. "They can burrow through the glacier walls at great speed and come upon us anywhere in the city. That our enemies are apparently breeding them is unwelcome news." She turned back to the other room, calling upon the soldiers. "Destroy them, all of them." Havendrow and orcs filtered in, all armed with long spears.
"I pray we've caught them early in this devious plot," Emelian said, moving to join the friends. "These are all young, very young, I think. I have seen some truly monstrous examples of their kind, several times larger than the largest in this pit, fierce and huge enough to swallow a drow whole. They do not feel the cold, they cannot be hurt with fire, and their jaws bite with more power than our armor can deflect."
"So we've seen," said Zack.
"Come," Emelian bade them.
"Let us finish our tasks here and be quickly to Caladae to alert the Siglig."
"This bodes ill," Azudana agreed. "More than you think," Jarlaxle thought, but did not say, for he was afraid that he was beginning to piece this all together now. He glanced over at the pile of crystals, then back to the pit, as the high-pitched screams of the doomed creatures began to fill the air. The cacophony did not bring any more giants or Slaadai into the room, and the scouting parties discovered that the other tunnels led mostly to empty rooms, or back up to empty caves on the surface. Their job here completed, the expedition soon after departed for Caladae. The bound frost giant, unhatched eggs, and several dead young Remorhosses in tow.
"They're going to kill that giant tonight," Caddybri told the other three as she joined them for dinner one night, the expedition about halfway back to Caladae.
"If you expect me to speak against that, you'll be sorely disappointed," Jarlaxle replied.
"If they need any help," Entreri offered.
"Their priests and wizards have used spells to scour his thoughts and have learned little," Caddybri explained. "He is a dull-witted brute, more than you would expect, and it seems as if he has been tending this place for a long while. He doesn't even know what they do with the Remorhosses when they leave the hatchery. And it would seem from what the Avendrow have learned that many have indeed left this place, unfortunately."
"It seems obvious enough what will be done with them," said Zack.
"Does it?" Jarlaxle asked, his serious tone catching them all off guard.
"You heard Azudana and Emelian," Zack reminded them.
Jarlaxle threw the question out to any of them. "Why do you think the hot springs flow? What brings all those small tributaries to create the lifeblood of the Avendrow city, the river Caladae?"
"Probably a volcano deep below," Entreri answered. "Maybe a god of fire like
Megara," Caddybri finished. "I had thought that. Is it possible that this glacier lies atop a captured primordial of fire?"
"I thought the glacier was an elemental of ice or a wind god, Khadij or whatever they call it," Zack added.
Caddybri shrugged. They could not know.
"Did you feel such a primordial back in the town near to the glacier?" Zack asked her. "When you reached through the ring, was there another Megara there to answer?"
"I didn't sense anything like that, just the glacier itself."
"Yet the Avendrow have been here for millennia, so they claim," Zack put in. "This area they have carved out has been stable all that time. Could opposing primordials be that evenly matched for that long?"
"Is it stable? Weren't there 5 burrows until fairly recently?"
Caddybri countered.
"Yes, as with the abandoned Olutian village," said Jarlaxle. "Is the glacier gaining the edge?"
"What are you getting at, Jarlaxle?" Caddybri asked.
"They ate crystal," he replied.
"Yes," she said, not getting his point.
We have seen polar worms in Icewind Dale. They eat anything and everything, including humans and drow. I've heard it said that they eat crystals to gain the power to so wickedly heat their back scales. Others say they eat crystals and stones to sharpen those teeth or mandibles or whatever they might be. The mercenary nodded and looked to Zachnephane. They ate crystal. A look of epiphany came over the weapon master.
The breathless rooms, he said, his voice barely above a whisper.
There are places in the Underdark, Jarlaxle explained to his surface-dwelling friends. Vast chambers of great heat and energy, though few are anywhere near Dimenzo Berenzon. We call them the breathless rooms because if you remain in one, the heat of it will burn your lungs so that you will never again be able to speak, or perhaps even to draw breath. Huge, vast chambers full of crystals. Beautiful, like flowering gardens of stone, but deadly. Crystals the size of the tallest trees of the crags. Even the Zwerf Neblin, who values such pretty baubles above all else, cannot mine them, because the heat is too much for them. Their priests would have to work harder than the miners simply to protect them from the burning energy of the massive crystals. I have heard of drow priestesses whose faith was doubted, being locked into such a chamber. Where only their fealty to Loth could grant them enough spells of protection to survive the duration, Zack added.
So you believe that the Slaughti and giants are breeding the worms to...
what?
Eat crystals? Caddy Bree asked.
They feel no heat and feel no cold, Jarlaxle reminded. He noted the doubting expressions coming back at him.
Breathless rooms wouldn't bother Remorhazes, Zack said.
It is only a possibility, Jarlaxle admitted.
A large storm came up the next day, but the following few days went along uneventfully, with no enemies but the wind and the ice coming up before the expedition. When the clouds finally broke, they were swept away on bitterly cold winds, but the four friends had their magic to protect them, and the clothing of the Caladaeans clearly kept them all warm enough. The stars sparkled above, the moon made its return, and the merry dancers too, green curtains setting all the frozen land aglow. On a high pass, the friends saw the river of ice, which they were now calling the Cadiz Glacier, in the distance, stretching out over the ice pack far away from the mountains.
It really must be a primordial or a god, Caddy Bree remarked. How could such a glacier as that exist? Glaciers are rivers of ice that lock into mountain passes or spill down from higher peaks, but this looks like the legend's claim, like a giant, frozen, now ice-covered creature that just lay down atop the ice and died.
She shook her head.
It makes no sense.
Have you not seen Anorak, the great desert? Jarlaxle asked her.
Caddy Bree, who had been reborn after Iruladun into a Bedian family, well knew Anorak, a landscape equally out of place and whose origins were legends no less exotic than the Avendrow explanation for this formation.
Come, Azudana bade them. We are almost to a place you must see.
She took them to Galathay and Emelian, who joined them in the hike for another hour, then turned the four friends away from the marching line and down a different trail, one going higher on the mountain the expedition was traversing.
Do you see? Emelian asked at one high plateau.
He pointed out across the ice. The friends peered and stared, studying the distant vista. They noted the glacial wall, but weren't quite sure what they were looking for. The dancers in the sky shivered and swirled as if offering their light to the search. And Zachnephane spied it first.
There, on the glacier, he said, near the top, down there to the right.
Caddy Bree started to ask what he meant, but then she saw it too. At first, she thought it just the wind-beaten and created sculptures of the ice wall. But as she looked more closely, she realized it to be more than that, more than natural. It was a castle, gigantic and intricate, cut against the glacial wall hundreds of feet from the ground and still hundreds of feet high. Now that they had seen it, they couldn't unsee it. It was many miles away, certainly, but so grandiose, so huge, that it mocked them even from afar.
That is the castle of the Frost Giants, Emelian explained. Or it was until the Slaughti came. Now it is shared. And I doubt the Frost Giants, Jarl, whoever leads them now, has much command above their guests.
Have you ever been there?
I have, said Galathay, on two occasions. It is not a place we raid regularly, for the cost is always too high. Your friend Doomwheel fell there when we went in pursuit of a raiding party that had captured several Kurit. We didn't rescue them, the paladin added somberly, and I was one of only a score who managed to escape. We believe Doomwheel to still be alive, Caddybri told her. I felt it through the sword. She could still be there. I don't know if she is or not. We don't go there unless we have no choice, Galathay said. If she is alive, it would be in the ice dungeons below. But down there looms the frozen death, the Cantian and Divi, the uninhabited and the overtaken, and in great numbers. Worse, even Khadige will wage war on invaders in those depths. If Doomwheel is alive there, she's still as good as dead. Cantian and Divi? Caddybri asked. The uninhabited and the... Galathay began. I know what the words mean, but what are they? Living water or ice, explained the paladin. The Canti hunt for living beings to encompass and possess, though it is more than possession. Together the Canti and the victim become Indivi. Well, that sounds lovely, Caddybri said, turning to Jarlaxle. She remembered the strange sensation she had known when seeking Doomwheel with Kazidea. You said you'd go only if you have no choice. I don't think we have a choice, Jarlaxle said, ignoring her concern. She is truly important to us, both in duty to her poor family and because she might hold the power to stop a war. As you went for yours. I do not doubt your desire or intent, Galathay assured him. You will speak with the Siglig when we return to Caladay. Make your case there, but do not expect that any of the Avendrau, the Kurit, or the Aurochs will accompany you beyond the entrance. We only wanted to show you, Azudana explained. This vantage alone along our trail reveals the ice castle under the light of the merry dancers. You kept asking about your friend. Caddybri looked at Jarlaxle, then both turned to Zacnaphane. He understood and drew out Kazidea, handing it over to Caddybri. The woman closed her eyes and held forth the sword, her grip loose. The sword swayed like the lights above, its tip going true to point at the distant castle. I feel her, Caddybri whispered. She is alive, I feel her. Perhaps what you feel is one not truly alive, Galathay said quietly. Either way, we must find out, Jarlaxle said with conviction.